This is musician Khaki King. She's playing her guitar in our studio. She plucks the strings with both hands while slapping the body of the guitar, all in a perfectly timed choreography. You kind of have to see it to believe it. Rolling Stone put Khaki King on its list of guitar gods. She's joined here by her bandmate, Dan Brannigan, on synthesizer. Khaki King's fourth album is just out. It's called Dreaming of Revenge. She joined us in the studio to talk about it, guitar in hand. And later on, she'll even sing a little for us. She started off with this instrumental. That's Bone Chaos in the Castle. It's the first track on the new album Dreaming of Revenge by guitarist Khaki King. Thank you for joining us here in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
And Dan Brannigan is here as well, playing something.
Breath-controlled analog synthesizer.
Which means a stick that plays like a trumpet.
That's exactly right.
Well, you know, something that occurs to me as I watch you play that song here in the studio is that at no point, Khaki King, do you touch the strings in the way that a normal guitar player touches the strings. You slap them, you hit the body, your style is so incredibly percussive. But I wonder how you write a song when there isn't a melody that you start with. What do you start with when you write a song?
Well, I am a chord person, or I'm a person that thinks in terms of progressions. Chordal progressions, and in doing this latest record, I was forced into becoming a melodist by my producer because he kept saying, "What you're doing is really interesting. Where is the melody?" So I actually, in this song, so the guitar, like that's actually a melody. Da 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 da. We picked it out of what I was doing within all this sort of craziness. And so starting to write a song, I'm actually, melody's kind of the last thing that I do, really. And in doing this last record, everything was fully written, all the guitar parts, and then all the melodies were written in the studio.
Let's hear a little bit from the album. Let's play the song Air and Kilometers. This. I want to ask you what this sound is. It sounds like you're playing a fork.
I am. I'm playing a spatula that is, it has grooves in the middle. So yeah, I'm playing it with a spoon. So I'm playing a spatula with a metal spoon.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm so proud of myself for having gotten that right. I was like, she's going to think I'm an idiot.
No,
but it sounds like a fork.
It's a giant fork played with a spoon.
I want to play another track. It's called Montreal. Mm-hmm. It's got this meditative feel to it. Mm-hmm.
And then the drums kick in.
And then the drums kick in. I read that your first love is drums.
My first unrequited love, yes, is drums. That's actually me playing drums.
I was going to ask that.
Yeah.
That was my question.
It's interesting. I think I always wanted to be a better drummer than I was a guitar player, but I always was better at guitar.
Why? What is it about you?
No clue. I have no idea. I think I just, because I never really practiced guitar too much, then I became just better at it. Things came more naturally, but I really, really tried at drums. And honestly, I'm a pretty competent pop drummer, but I can't really go much further than that.
You know, from watching your guitar playing, I would guess that it's an unrequited love, the drums, but you never broke up with them.
No, we're still, I call them up every now and then and reminisce about the, you know, how it could have been.
Yet you've been on Rolling Stone magazine's Guitar Gods list.
I don't care. I wanted to be on their Drum Gods list.
I mean, it seems like there's so much about your guitar playing that is drawn from the drums.
Yes, but deceptively so. I think that for many, many years I was asked this question and people would say, oh, you use your guitar like a bongo and therefore you are obviously a drummer. But there's really what makes sense to me is when you're learning drums, you have to become ambidextrous. And the instinct is to hit things at the same time, you know, playing the hi-hat and the snare and then the kick drum. And all four limbs have to become independent of each other. So I realized that, yes, it's true, while drums have influenced my, quote, percussive guitar playing, it's really because my left hand can do something by itself and my right hand can do something else. I mean, a lot of guitar players would, you know, fret a chord and strum it. That's a horrible sound because I'm not in the right tuning. And so the right and left hands are working simultaneously, but just because of my failed attempts at becoming the greatest rock drummer ever, I'm you know, my left hand can sit here and do a little bass line, and then my right hand can do something else. That is how I became the guitar player that I am. Not just because, yes, there's a little bit of tapping here and there, but it's more that, you know, right and left hand are separated.
Your earlier albums were almost all instrumental. Mm-hmm. Your albums sort of step into the voice, mm-hmm. Getting back to this melodic idea. How did you work on finding your voice?
Well, for the last record, Until We Felt Red, I knew I wanted to do something very different. In a lot of ways, which I did. And one of those was I thought, you know, I've written these songs, I should sing them. But I had this super infatuation with shoegazing music, like really ethereal sounding vocals with lots and lots of delay and reverb. But I was sort of enamored by that. And on this record, I started to just sing in, you know, what my singing voice is.
Your songs seem to sort of exist in this space between major and minor, between happy and sad.
Mm, yeah. Melancholy. That's what that's called.
Yeah. It reminds me of, you're going to hate this, Morrissey.
I love Morrissey, and that's the greatest thing you could have possibly said.
Oh, good.
I'm a humongous fan.
Oh, good.
And in fact, life being what it is, we all dream of revenge, is a quote from Gauguin, but the reason that I used it in the song and titled the record and, you know, is because it reminded me of something that Morrissey would say.
Would you play it for us?
Yeah.
Guitarist, songwriter, musician, Khaki King, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Put a note in my pocket, said be good to yourself, but that was all.
Guitarist Khaki King and trumpet player Dan Brannigan are on tour right now with the Foo Fighters. They just finished up in Australia. They're on their way to New Zealand. Khaki King's new album is called Dreaming of Revenge. Our studio session and so much more are at npr.org/music.
Life being what it is, we all dream of revenge. Open your eyes for a second, just throw them at me. I stared straight into the sun, something to concentrate on. Do anything you'd give. give up everything for God knows why. I just can't stay till you're gone. I won't wish you well, I won't see you off, I won't try to call. If I see you in my mind, I'll say to you, it's not your fault. September, but that's not long enough for me. You put a note in my pocket for it to take care of me, but that was all.
Khaki King here in NPR studio. The song is Life Being What It Is. Parting words tonight come from another great guitarist, the legendary Andrés Segovia. He said, "The guitar is a small orchestra. It is polyphonic. Every string is a different color, a different voice." Segovia also said, "Listening to the guitar is like listening to a small, mysterious orchestra, as if one were hearing through the wrong end of the binoculars." That's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Andrea Seabrook. May the 4th be with you.
Would you believe Marvin Gaye wrote Sexual Healing in the Belgian fishing village of Ostend? How sexy is that? As a tribute, a new Belgian and soul food bistro called Marvin has opened up in Marvin's hometown of Washington, D.C. Christopher Johnson paid the restaurant a visit.
Marvin Gaye was going through things by the time 1980 rolled around. He had just trudged through his second divorce. His two most recent albums bounced like bricks. And after 21 chart-topping years, his ties with Motown Records were strained. Mr. Marvin was broke and staying in London when he rappelled deep into his drug habit. A Belgian promoter came to Gaye's rescue with an idea. Come to Ostend, catch your breath, and reignite your career. The move worked, and on July 4th, 1981, Marvin repaid the town of Ostend with one hell of a show. Gaye's two-year Belgian detox sometimes gets overlooked in the scheme of a career that lasted a quarter century. But Eric Hilton of the Washington-based DJ duo Thievery Corporation hasn't missed it. He opened Marvin last fall as a modern tribute to that vital retreat. Marvin stands right near 14th and U Streets Northwest in Washington's Shaw neighborhood. That area was once the heart of D.C.'s black social life. Duke Ellington lived nearby, and Marvin Gaye dropped out of Cardoza High School right up the street. Now it's springtime, and the yuppification is in full bloom. That's how a Belgian-style bistro just blocks away from the legendary Ben's Chili Bowl makes any sense at all.
Welcome to Marvin. My name's Eric Hilton, and I'm going to take you on a tour.
Eric and his partners opened the two-story restaurant back in the fall. He wanted to create a menu that mixed Belgian cuisine with soul food. He'd serve it all up in the space he rebuilt from the ruins of a Subway sandwich shop.
Everything you see is new, although it looks old. You know, the dark wood, it's very common in, like, French bistros.
Eric Hilton's menu avoids Hard Rock Cafe-style cliches. No mercy, mercy tuna melts or ain't nothing like the grilled wings. Still, the cuisine does give a slight nod to Mr. Marvin.
He loved sole, Dover sole, and chicken, and we have both of those, so that's good.
The centerpiece downstairs is a large image of Marvin Gaye himself. He's seated like Soul Buddha number one, smiling as he watches over all the people who've come to dine in his honor. But the place to be is Marvin's rooftop deck.
Okay, well, this obviously is where everybody is right now because it's 78 and sunny. And it's incredible because it'll be like, you know, 20 degrees out in January and people still pile on this deck.
When Eric steps away, D.C. native Terry Ford breaks down his thoughts on this place called Marvin.
I love the spot, but I don't see where Marvin Gaye fits in it. But they draw a crowd, you know, and by that I mean, you know, beautiful women. So I got to represent.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of which, I ran into Katie, another D.C. native, and her friend Rebecca from Wisconsin.
I've never had a bad meal, and I'm picky about my french fries and my waffles and my fried chicken.
Oh, my God, the chicken and waffles are amazing. It's like heaven on a plate.
Rebecca came to D.C. to be in politics, but she came to Marvin to celebrate her birthday. Deep into a glass of champagne, she seemed to speak for many of those other ambitious civil servants, whooping it up after hours on the sunny rooftop.
By day, I save the world, and by night, I come to Marvin's. I'm just kidding.
Some patrons, like Terry Ford, wondered out loud what a Belgian-style bistro has to do with the late soul music legend. What is clear is folks love this restaurant as a classy spot to eat, drink, and party with friends. And it's hard to believe the late, great Mr. Gaye wouldn't be down with all of that. For NPR News, I'm Christopher Johnson.
Day to Day is a production of NPR News with contributions from Slate.com. I'm Madeline Brand.
And I'm Alex Cohen.
Mint Condition hit the music scene back in 1991 with a top 10 pop single, Breaking My Heart. Nearly 18 years later, the platinum-selling R&B group is still around. The five members work out of Minnesota and now have their own record label. Mint Condition's new album, their ninth, is called E-Life. I sat down with band members Stokely Williams, Jeffrey Allen, and Homer Odell to talk about getting their start with the iconic producers Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis.
We actually it came out here in search of a record deal like earlier on, and it's just ironic that we ended up being on the same label that we came out here, and they were told us no and shut the door. No, get out of here, kid. And ended up, you know, through, you know, Perspective Records. But, yeah, we met these guys, you know, that were around town, just, you know, homeboys and everything, and we had our first or one of our showcases at First Avenue, and they came out to see us. They loved the show, and you know, we invited, you know, the whole Prince family out, you know, at the time and everything. And next thing you know, he was up in flight time, you know, having a meeting with him. And you're like, what do you all want to do? It's like, well,
we just want to make music and do our own thing, kind of, you know. So they were like, you guys can do the whole album if you want.
Staying in the past for a second, was the music industry as you got into it what you expected it to be? You know, I mean, obviously a lot of people dream about making a career. You made a career.
Right.
Was it what you thought it would be?
I don't even think I thought about it like that. I just wanted to do music. And that was one of the things that people who did music, they did. They just went and got a record. I thought you got a record deal and you went out and just played all. The business side of it, I didn't even think about. You know, I just wanted to make music. So at that point, when we got into it, it was probably learning that, you know, business is probably 90-95% of it, really, was probably my biggest shocker. And it was like, well, we can't play music today, we got to do, you know. So that was probably my biggest eye opener getting into this game, is like, wow, the business takes up so much time of it, and it takes away from just creating music. That, you know, that was my downer for me, you know, the business being this being more business than music. Always wondered why you ran that phone from the neighbor's house.
you guys have been together for 18 years now. Did you think that you would ever reach a point where you had just stuck with each other so long? I mean, you've only had one person not be on this album out of the original six people. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment. What made you, you know, be willing to go the distance with each other?
Something we always strive for. I mean, we always said that we never wanted like a big hit and want to retire from that. You know, it was the thing is we always wanted a career, which is, you know, old school days they had careers, and a lot of them are around still today, like the Temptations, and you know, most people get in the music industry, they have like moments, you know, it's just like and they're gone in 5 years. It's like the lifespan of an artist now is pretty rough. So I mean, that's how we kind of measure our success. You know, like in the old days, I mean, that's how they did it. You know, you stick together, you try to make it a career, a business, and figure out how you can parlay that into other things, and you try to enrich your life around it. You know, with family and other interests that you have. So we just we're blessed that we're still here and, you know, still relevant. People still digging what we do. Now we kind of tough, but just end up fighting. Try making up, but there's just no denying. Just ain't the same no more. What are we putting ourselves through all this for? You talking, hear me, but you can't communicate. Cause you're not listening. No, these are two different things. Now I see what it means to have been. What about this album? What was it like going back into the studio, having had, you know, time pass, and I'm sure all of you have had X, Y, and Z personal and professional developments. You've got lives that probably have other obligations. What was the process of recording this album? The process was what led us to the title, which is E-Life, you know, which has to do with the way the world is working now, electronically through email, downloading and file sharing, MPEGs and JPEGs, yada, yada, all that stuff. So so the title has more so to do with the approach than lyrically, which we do touch on some things lyrically as well, having deal with relationships in this in the texting age, you know, that we have now. This is a natural progression for us, I think. We've always been, like, interested in, like, technology, you know, being a live band, and everything, you know, traditional in sense as far as instrumentation, drums, bass, guitar, horns. But we've always, you know, experimented with, for instance, on the Life's Aquarium CD that we did digital tracking then. You know, we kind of experimented, and the engineers were like, I don't know, is this good enough, the quality? And it turned out that it was. So everything turned out just right, you know. And experimenting with, for instance, they would file share with me, like, a track, and I'd sing on it, and then, you know, ship it off to Rick to do bass on it, you know. That was one way, and then we would set up, you know, to, like, in a live kind of setting and do that as well. So
much of this was done in parallel or even, you know, at different times using technology.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you find that distancing or difficult?
Really, it wasn't as time-consuming because everybody did it at their leisure kind of, or, you know, I'll get to this if I had certain time constraints or anybody else had certain time constraints. It worked out just by the end of this day, have it finished, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, the days we had to be there all together, we did that too. So we was like, this is real interesting. You know, I mean, like I said, this is the day I did a project. So last year with this guy I've never met, you know, from England. He emailed me a thing, emailed it back. It's on his record, you know. Mm-hmm. That's how people are doing music in business these days, you know. So there's all kinds of different ways. But, you know, we thought it was... it's still interesting music, and as long as we can always get our live element in there, you know, it's always good. But the thing is, to stay relevant, you always got to keep your ear to the street. Give it up for my little baby girl. She's the only one in my world. She's the only one who really loves me. I can tell when she comes and hugs me. Give it up for my little baby boy. Another one who brings me joy.
Would you or have you told your kids, yeah, music is a great thing to do, or stay away?
Oh, no.
What, Jeffrey?
I always tell him I'm doing this so you don't have to. This is why I'm doing it. You're gonna go on. You don't worry about it. You're going straight to college. There ain't gonna be no, I'm gonna take a year off. College will be here. No. Uh-uh. You're going straight in. You're finishing. Yeah. Then if you want to do something, that's, yeah.
For me, well, I already have a daughter that plays. Actually, both of my daughters, one plays keyboards and the other one plays guitar. And the guitar player is, she's a true rocker. So, you know, she's going to do something with it. Like I told them, whatever you want to do, as long as it's something positive, I'm behind you. Don't worry about it. I got you. Just, you know, keep it positive and we're cool. If it's music, then I'm cool. You know, it could be something worse. So,
yeah, I know, absolutely. Yeah,
music
yeah,
ain't.
That's right.
Well, gentlemen, it has been a lot of fun. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
That was Homer Odell, Stokely Williams, and Jeffrey Allen of Mint Condition. Their new album, E-Life, is out in stores today. They join me here in our NPR West studios. I make sure I check the lesson, 'cause one of these days. That's our show for today, and thank you for sharing your time with us. To listen to the show or subscribe to our podcast, visit our website, nprnewsandnotes.org. To join the conversation or sign up for our newsletter, visit our blog at nprnewsandviews.org. News and Notes was created by NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Tomorrow, we'll round up the results of the presidential contest in North Carolina and Indiana with NPR senior Washington editor Ron Elving.